In a painted logo, a woman stands on a tiered pedestal. Wearing a Roman toga, she holds a torch aloft. Its brilliant light shimmers against a silver word. Columbia, a Sony Pictures Entertainment Company. On a black screen, words appear. Columbia Pictures presents an Overbrook Entertainment production, a Blinding Edge Pictures production.
Mayday, mayday, this is Hespital 999 Heavy in distress.
A boy wears a breathing mask.
Engines 1 and 2 are offline. We're losing her.
A man in a similar mask tries to calm the panting boy.
Go! Go!
The teenage boy startles and they both turn to the side. A sudden jolt sends the man flying down a long corridor away from the boy. Cut to black. Now the teenager lies on his side in a verdant clearing. He wears a gray form-fitting bodysuit. The boy trembles with chalky, swollen lips. A bed of short leafy shoots surrounds his prone body.
I've heard stories of Earth. A paradise. Until we destroyed it.
A forest burns. Smokestacks billow pollutants into the air. Fire rages through an urban landscape. Floodwaters sweep away boats, cars, and other debris. A title fades into view. After Earth. Panicked people flee offices and run in the streets.
The founding of the United Ranger Corps 1,000 years ago was a global military effort. An evacuation of Earth.
Near a rocket ship platform, a young woman in a crowd looks up at a towering cylindrical vessel.
The Rangers would lead the settlement of mankind's new home, Nova Prime.
Spaceships approach a planet. Two vessels coast above a canyon river.
But we were not alone.
A child walks atop an arid summit. As a man carries the child away, a ship crests the lip of the mountain.
The aliens release the Ursa. Monsters, bred to kill humans. Technically blind, the Ursa sees humans based on the pheromones we secrete when frightened. They literally smell our fear. Humankind was again in danger of extinction, and again turned to the Rangers for the answer. And that answer came in the form of the Prime Commander Cypher Rage, the original ghost. He's believed to be so completely free of fear that to an Ursa, he is invisible. This phenomena is known as ghosting.
On rocky terrain, the blade-wielding Prime Commander slays a large gray alien creature. In the woods, the trembling boy lies and stares through the narrow slits of his swollen eyelids. Now words appear. 3 days earlier, Nova Prime Human Settlement, Nova Solar System. A group of young men and women in form-fitting uniforms jogs across a dusty red mesa. Planetary masses, one enormous and one small, loom on the horizon. Now the group runs beside a man-made reservoir. Among their ranks, the short, lithe teenage boy slowly surpasses the others. He makes his way to the head of the pack.
This isn't a race, cadet!
The swift cadet pulls well ahead of the other runners. He pumps his arms methodically as he traverses the narrow waterside walkway.
Rage!
In an office, he stands at attention.
Your test scores are very impressive. In the classroom, you are an outstanding ranger, but in the field, you collapse. I'm not advancing you. You may try again next year.
Sir, I am dedicated, have studied, and consistently display conduct becoming of a ranger, sir. I request that the commander reconsider his assessment, sir.
Cadet.
Sir, my father's returning home tonight. I haven't seen him in... It's a very special day for our family. And I've got to be able to tell him that I'm a ranger, sir.
Seated at a desk, the cadet's superior sizes him up.
You tell your father that I said welcome home. Dismissed.
With an impassive look, the teenager does a sharp about-face. He leaves the office, walking between panels of stretched white fabric. In an airy home, a woman watches the stern-faced Prime Commander enter. He wears a white uniform and nods to her.
Fire.
Cypher takes a few stiff steps toward her. With an exuberant smile, she throws her arms around his neck. Maintaining his stoic expression, he rests his chin on her shoulder. Faya pulls away, scrutinizing his face. He looks down at the home's main room where his son stands at attention. Cloth panels close over large windows. Later, the boy sits at the dinner table with a downcast look.
How are finals?
His father sits next to him, eating with three interconnected chopsticks. He turns to the boy.
How are finals?
I wasn't advanced to Ranger.
The teenager picks at his meal. His father's brow tightens.
Where do we look when we speak?
I was not advanced to Ranger.
You were not advanced to Ranger.
I was not advanced to Ranger, sir.
The father levels a hard stare at his brooding child. He turns a sharp gaze on his wife, who responds with a challenging tilt of her head. He returns to his meal.
That's all right, you're young.
Next I ran the canyons 11 seconds faster than you did.
Faya shuts her eyes.
You weren't ready. Valen's a good man, he knows his stuff. If you were, he would have promoted you. You weren't ready.
The boy tosses down his napkin.
I'm not hungry. I'm going to my room.
Are you asking me or telling
May
me?
May I go to my room, sir?
Denied! Sit down!
Cypher glares at his son. Sitting back down, the boy stares straight ahead. While his father fixes his gaze on him, Faya observes her husband. Later, she manipulates a holographic interface depicting several rings of triangular components surrounding a central column. As Cypher enters, she shuts the image off. Coming up behind her, he lifts a pendant necklace over her head, startling her. He fastens it for her. Looking down, Faya fondles the jewelry. He takes a seat beside her.
I have a last visit to Iphitos. Flying tomorrow, supervising training. And after it's completed, I'm announcing my retirement.
She leans back.
Retirement?
Maybe I'll work with you in Turbine Division together.
She presses her palms together in supplication and shakes her head.
I want my family back. I want you back.
Faya settles her almond-shaped eyes on the broad-shouldered man.
That boy in there is trying to find you. He's a feeling boy. He's an intuitive boy. He watched you read that book with Senji his entire life. He's reading that book now. He's reaching for you. Don't get me wrong. I respect everything you've done. But you have a son in the other room that you do not know. He blames himself for what happened to Senshi. He thinks it's his fault. He's drowning. And he does not need a commanding officer. He needs a father.
Faya holds her husband's face in her hands. She watches him gaze off thoughtfully and nod. In his room, their son stands with his back to a shallow desk and a nearby hammock. Small plants in clear glass bowls decorate the pristine white space. Bowing his head, Cypher enters and stands well behind the boy, who wears a loose sleeveless shirt.
Pack your bags. You're coming with me to Iphitos.
As Cypher exits between two stretched panels partially covering the room's entrance, his son whips around. Our view pulls back to reveal the exterior of their home. Large angled windows framed in white comprise the bulk of the conical structure. Lights within similar buildings glow in the distance. The boy grabs a bag and quickly crosses the room. Daytime. A spacecraft sits inside a cave-like rock hangar. Faya walks with Cypher.
This was a really good decision. Now we'll go make some good memories together.
The raven-haired woman smiles at him. Now she tenderly hugs her teenage son.
You take it easy on your father. He's a little rusty.
He smiles. She steps back, then turns to go. As she passes Cypher, she lightly grasps his hand in hers, then leaves. Wearing a simple collared uniform, the imposing man walks up to the boy, who offers him a wide grin.
General Raish.
Father and son turn to a one-legged man approaching in a chair.
I was on the plateau. You saved me and four others. I just came from seeing my baby girl's face for the first time.
Two men flank the wounded ranger.
Stand me up.
That won't be necessary, Ranger.
Then stand me up.
the boy watches as the accompanying rangers each take an arm and lead the man toward Cypher. The ranger hops forward, then gains his footing. He stands unassisted and salutes his commanding officer. The general reciprocates. Cypher lowers his hand. With glistening eyes, the brown-uniformed ranger does the same. The team watches with an expression of wonder as his father puts an arm around the one-legged man's torso and helps him back to his chair. The boy catches sight of a large boulder with hollow protrusions. It rises on a platform into the bottom of the spacecraft. Men in helmets and armed with spears stand guard around the object until it gets loaded on board. Retractable metal panels close over the hatch. Now the stingray-shaped vessel emerges from an opening in a sheer orange cliffside. Its tail engine burns blue as it turns gracefully in the air past the conical buildings of the Nova Prime settlement. Later, the sleek ship cuts through puffy clouds as it rises higher into the atmosphere. The two planetary masses hang off in the distance. Now in space, the ship cruises past the vast expanse of the planet. It soars into the cosmic darkness. Inside the ship, the general sits beside his son. Rangers sit nearby. Thick belts strap them to the rigid wall of the craft. Cypher works on a flexible tablet screen in his hand. He glances at the boy, who smiles at him. Cypher quickly looks back at the holographic interface.
I'm reading Moby Dick.
Your mother told me. That's great.
He returns his attention to the tablet.
Our military transport will arrive at training base on Phaetos in 7 hours.
He rolls up the device.
I'm going to grab some rack time. Recommend you do the same.
The boy nods. Now, as the general and other passengers sleep in their chairs, the awake boy leans his head against the wall. Glowing blue lights dot the ship's exterior as it cruises through space. Later, the teen stares at the ceiling, then glances at his sleeping father. Now he exits the lab, closing the translucent, flexible door behind him. He steps through an archway, then stops. Turning, he spots something in the other direction. Ducking beneath a pipe, he approaches a wall labeled No Entry, Restricted Area, Hazardous Cargo. He eyes the warning, then separates a partition of thick cream-colored bristles and steps through. His curious eyes land on the large boulder with holes, secured to the walls by a dozen wire supports.
There. Can you read?
His nervous gaze shifts on a brutish ranger.
I said, can you read?
Yes, sir.
Well, there's a sign back there. Authorized personnel only. Why didn't you read that?
The team glances at the boulder.
What's in the cage?
Might want to go easy on him, Sarge. That's the Prime Commander's son right there.
A few rangers sit nearby. Shifting his weight, the sergeant eyes the team.
You're racist, kid.
What's in there?
A sinister smile spreads on the sergeant's face. He glances at his man, then leans into the general's son.
You want to see?
The team stands closer to the eerie cage. In a flashback.
We have to go, right now.
Is that...
They surprised us. Send ships, drop those things.
In the present, the cage slightly rocks.
And Ursa?
Taking it to Phaetos for ghost training. You want to see if you can ghost?
In the hall, Cypher's eyes open. Leaning forward with a tensed brow, he glances aside at his son's empty seat, then unhooks his safety strap. The general stands from the row of sleeping rangers. He steps toward the hull's curved outer wall, covered in tiny hexagonal panes with a narrow row of translucent windows. Stopping, the general tilts his head and shifts his eyes. Cypher removes the ring from his finger and holds it against the glossy window. The metal ring vibrates off the panes. Shifting his concerned gaze away, Cypher retracts his hand.
Ghosting is when you don't have a trace of fear in you.
Slowly lifting his foot, the general's son steps onto the red warning line before the Ursa's cage. The sergeant and his rangers watch from several feet behind. The team gazes at the ominous enclosure. In a flashback, an older girl holds him protectively.
Most guys freeze.
The teen's lips separate.
That's your cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
Your blood is filling with adrenaline right now.
In the flashback, the older girl rolls a glass dome.
Whether you know it or not, your heart's beating faster.
She closes the young boy inside the dome.
It's getting a little harder to breathe. Your neurobiological system is telling it to run, but your knees are too weak to move.
The boy watches her from inside the dome.
And it's too late anyway. Pores in your skin have already opened up, secreting an imperceptible amount of pheromones into the air.
The teenager's feet cross the red line.
And all he can think about is when it's gonna kill you.
The teenager calmly breathes. He recalls being inside the glass dome.
Zinchi!
The teenager lurches back.
She sees you, kid.
Attention up there!
Kitai, back to your seat now.
Kitai obeys his father.
Rangers, go Redcon 1.
Secure Togo!
Rangers quickly move about the ship. Kitai follows the general back into the hall.
Behind your seat, that's a life suit. Put it on now. Strap in full harness.
Yes, sir.
Kitai grabs the life suit and sits. His father climbs a steep staircase and enters the cockpit.
Good evening, General.
Captain, what's the last known position of the closest asteroid storm?
The pilot reads data on a holographic projection.
Category 4 asteroid formation. 2,000 kilometers to starboard at plus 4-5 declination.
I detected graviton vibrations in the hull.
But you detected how?
Graviton buildup could be a precursor to mass expansion. That storm could be on us in minutes.
But sir, mass expansion is 1 in 1,000,000.
In the hull, Kitai smooths the tight-fitting life suit along his arms. He sits and fastens the seat's safety straps, anxiously glancing around. In the cockpit, Cypher examines the data.
If we try to navigate out, the pull of our own graviton weight could set the thing off. Let's just hold course and hope I'm wrong.
Just out of interest, sir, how often are you wrong?
My wife would give a very interesting answer to that question.
The navigator faces a shrinking holographic image.
Graviton counts decreasing. 800 parts per million. 650.
Well, sir, there's a first time for everything.
A large pulse erupts in the distance, jostling the ship. The navigator eyes the now enlarging holographic projection. The ship enters a surging asteroid storm. Cypher braces himself between two support beams as the ship violently shudders. In the hull, Kitai grips his legs and shifts his wide-eyed gaze. In the cockpit, the general leans over his captain.
Turn into it. Match bearing.
Metal poles circle the base of the Ursa's shaking cage. An asteroid collides with a wing.
Dad!
She's a dead stick. Engines 1 and 2 are offline. We're losing her.
Can you travel us out of here?
Where?
The Anchorage, La Silla, it's closest.
Negative, sir. We cannot wormhole travel in the middle of it.
Do it.
The general lifts a seat from the floor and straps himself in. His son trembles in the hall.
Coordinates for Anchorage and La Silla locked in. No confirmation signal, sir.
Travel us now.
Sir, with that confirmation.
That's an order.
Outside, a massive jagged asteroid clips the top of the ship. Down, the captain and navigator press their open palms to glowing blue panels. They glare at the raging storm as Cypher maintains his unwavering composure. The ship convulses as massive asteroids zip by. A brilliant white light consumes them. The ship travels down a corridor of blue light. Elsewhere, a swirling blue wormhole erupts and the ship launches out. It soars into the vast, tranquil space. The navigator glances back at his stoic general. Holographic projections flicker across the windshield.
Cabin pressure dropping. Heavy damage to outer hull. Breach possible in middle cabin.
In the hull, a ranger hands Kitai an oxygen mask. As the team puts it on, its sides illuminate blue.
Find me something I can land on. Now.
The navigator scrolls through various planets on a holographic display. He stops on one.
I got something. Bearing 340 by 95. Range 86,000.
A satellite shimmering panel reflects their ship as it soars toward a blue-hued planet. Red lights blink on the satellite. The cockpit lights go out, then flicker on as Cypher unbuckles his shoulder straps. Cocking his head, the general steps forward and presses a flashing red button on the control panel.
Warning.
This planet has been declared unfit for human habitation. Placed under Class 1 quarantine by the Interplanetary Authority, under penalty of law. Do not attempt to land. Repeat, do not attempt to land.
Cypher gazes at Earth.
It's not possible.
The navigator swallows hard.
Computer might have defaulted back to a non-demarcation point.
He faces the general, who shakes his head.
No. Not here. Travel us again.
Negative, sir. This ship is going to tear apart at any moment.
The general shifts his placid gaze from the captain, who keeps a tense stare forward. Cypher lifts his chin.
Set her down.
The pilot nods at his navigator. As the general walks away, the captain leans toward the controls.
Mayday, this is Hespertu 999 Heavy in distress. We took heavy damage from an asteroid storm and are going down with Bingo power.
As they speed into Earth's atmosphere, flames engulf the ship. Brilliant light shines through the hull windows. Strapped in his seat, Katai squirms frantically. A ranger hands Cypher an oxygen mask as he moves to his frenzied son. He stills the teen's flailing arms, then points at his own eyes. He makes a calming motion with his hand and the boy nods. They glance to their side. Cypher regains eye contact with the boy and moves his hand up and down with Katai's calming breaths. The general gets sucked away through the hull. As Katai desperately reaches toward his father, a piece of the ship breaks off, sucking three rangers into the sky. From a ground view, two large sections of the ship plummet in different directions. Secure in his seat, Katai's eyes roll back and slowly close. His limp body jolts with the crashing ship. Cut to black. The dazed teen slowly awakes in his seat. His heavy eyelids blink as he rolls his head forward. The clear oxygen mask fogs up with each slow breath. Ship debris litters the blighted hull. Severed wires and tubing dangle all around him. At the near end, a flexible curtain expands and retracts. Light shines through its clear material. Katai lifts the oxygen mask. He quickly replaces the mask over his mouth and inhales deep breaths. Standing, the young teen gazes at the curtain as it opens and closes. He crouches beside a dead ranger whose body lies in the curtain's path. As he unties a thick rope from the ranger's arm, the curtain forms a seal in the passage and across the ranger's back, then retracts. Katai reaches toward the ranger but withdraws his arm. Shifting his position, the teen extends a leg and nudges the dead body outward. He quickly backs away as the unobstructed curtain fully expands. Remaining closed, it seals the hull. Katai lifts a hand to his oxygen mask and removes it. The teen gazes into the downed ship. Stepping forward, he cautiously moves through the wreckage. The teen's glazed eyes shift about. Stopping, he peers through a large hole in the wall. White netting dangles on the other side. Katai's probing gaze lands on something. He climbs through and moves to his unconscious father, lying face up with a large object on his legs. The anxious teen leans his ear over Cypher's face, then examines his bloody forehead. Kneeling up, Katai's saddening eyes frantically shift over the body. Cypher's slow, quiet breaths fog up his oxygen mask. The general's chest slowly expands. Katai glances upward with his brow raised. Tensing his face, the teen chokes back tears. His forehead drops to his father's arm and he nuzzles into his chest. At night, Katai kneels beside his father, staring at the floor. His startled gaze rises as the general awakes. Katai leans close and Cypher removes the oxygen mask. The groggy man faces his son.
All right. You stand?
Katai stands.
Evaluate.
Wincing, he grasps his left shoulder, then checks the other.
Good to go.
Confirm the Ursus contained.
The back of the ship is gone.
Cypher glances around.
Rangers, count off!
Cypher connects eyes with his son. Lifting his head, he points at something. Katai retrieves a large sack and places it beneath his father's head. The general stares straight above them.
The cockpit is directly above us.
Go.
Katai steps into the debris-filled cockpit.
Left rear. There's a utility compartment.
The cadet climbs the wreckage into the overturned compartment.
Inside, there's an emergency beacon. Silver, like a saucer. Bring it to me.
Katai opens two thick rubbery flaps, removing the glossy, smooth-edged device. Cipher flicks his wrist, and the beacon slides apart with its top section badly cracked. The general rubs his face. Gripping a rope, Cipher pulls himself onto a hanging makeshift gurney. Katai carefully lifts each leg, then eyes his blood-soaked hands as the mechanical gurney slowly rises. He walks behind the gurney as it moves along a ceiling track, carrying Cipher over the wreckage. Now in the cockpit, the injured general sits upright beside the control panel.
Consolidate inventory up.
Clenching his jaw, Cipher leans forward and reaches for the control panel. Projected holographic displays spread along the curved windshield. Sitting back in the chair, Cipher cringes in pain. He lifts a tense stare as the colorful data retraces the ship's crash to planet Earth. A projection zooms in on both crash sites, showing the distance between their present location and the ship's tail section. Cipher reaches to the controls and turns on a mission log voice recorder.
General Cipher Rage. Crash landed. Two confirmed survivors.
Katai peers down through a portal at a dead body. Shaking his head, he rolls another dead ranger through the hull. Cipher lifts Katai's arm, and holographic data surrounds the teen's forearm. At the control panel, the general pulls up a monitor. He turns over Katai's arm, and the monitor reads vital sync.
Katai. The emergency beacon you brought me will fire a distress signal deep into space. But it is damaged. There's another one in the tail section of our ship.
Cipher reaches for the control panel. He projects both locations over a 3D terrain map on the dash.
This is us here.
A white line draws the long path.
That is the tail, somewhere in this area.
Katai eyes it closely.
It's approximately 100 kilometers from here.
Cipher faces his son's apprehensive gaze.
We need that beacon.
Katai stares at the map. Turning, he faces his father.
You understand?
The young teen nods softly.
Both my legs are broken, one very badly. You are going to retrieve that beacon, or we are going to die.
Nodding, Katai shifts his fearful eyes.
Do you understand?
He looks up and nods harder.
Repeat what I just said to you.
I have to go retrieve the beacon.
He gazes into his father's eyes.
Or we're going to die.
Cipher nods. Turning away, he lifts a container to his lap.
You have air filtration inhalers.
He pulls out a small fluid-filled disc.
You need to take one now. The fluid will coat your lungs, increasing your oxygen extraction, allowing you to breathe more comfortably in the environment.
Katai inhales the fluid.
You have 6 vials. At your weight, that should be 20 to 24 hours each. That's more than enough.
He turns Katai around.
Your life suit and backpack are equipped with digital and virtual imaging, so I will be able to see everything that you see and what you do not see. I will guide you.
Video feed shows Cypher's face.
It'd be like I'm right there with you.
Cipher hands him a foot-long metal tube.
Take my cutlass. It's the C-40. Full 22 configurations. Katai, every single decision you make will be life or death. This is a class 1 quarantined planet. Everything on this planet has evolved to kill humans.
Katai's lower lip quivers.
Do you know where we are?
No, sir.
Cipher stares into his son's eyes.
This is Earth.
With his tense brow raised, the teen nods as his fearful gaze lowers. In a flashback, Katai watches Senshi fight off an Ursa as he hides beneath the glass dome. The murderous beast knocks her down. In the present, Katai's terrified gaze shifts to his father.
Tessa?
There are three possibilities. The first and most likely is that it died in the crash. The second and less likely is that it is injured very badly and still contained. The third and least likely is that it is out. We will proceed, however, in anticipation of the worst-case scenario. Every movement will be under protocol escape and evade. If he's out there, I will see him long before he gets anywhere near you. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
Do exactly as I tell you. And we will survive.
Katai swallows hard. Shifting his anxious eyes, he takes short breaths through his nose. The scared teen steps forward and embraces his father, resting his head on Cypher's chest. The general places a hand on his son's shoulder, then gently cradles his head. In the early morning, patches of melting ice slide along a window. Katai stands in the hall holding his father's cutlass. He presses a button and a blade extends from each end. The young cadet takes a clear path through the wreckage, approaching the collapsible curtain seal. The curtain retracts as Katai moves closer. He proceeds into the unknown. Katai climbs down from the wreckage. As he reaches the ground, he spots a crewman's body lying against a beam. Katai pulls out his cutlass.
Katai, calm down. Take a knee.
The frightened teen sinks to one knee.
Root yourself in this present moment now. Sight, sound, smell. What do you feel?
My body feels heavier.
Very good. Earth's gravitational pull is different than at home. Very good. Now let's go.
The teen slides his hands over his weapon's grip, retracting the dual blades. Later, he climbs a mossy rock wall beside the wreckage. As Katai reaches up to a higher rock, a tarantula creeps onto his hand. Pulling himself up, Katai spots it. As he shakes it off, he slips.
What happened?
You didn't see that?
Katai, what happened?
Planted firmly on the wall, the teen blinks.
I'm fine. No change. I just slipped.
Cypher rolls his head.
There's condensation on the stones. I'm good to go.
Katai pulls himself up the steep mountainside past gauzy webbing hanging from jagged protrusions. Later, the teen reaches the top. Behind him, wispy clouds hang around a verdant mountain. In the cockpit, Cypher moves Katai's live video feed for a closer look. Katai's jaw drops as he stares out at the beautiful landscape. A widespread flock of birds flies in the distance, while a second flock dips and swerves beside the teen. Katai steps to a rocky ledge to gaze down on hundreds of buffalo-like creatures slowly moving in a herd down a grassy slope. On the ship, Cypher gazes at the video feed. Near Katai, a flock of birds swoops up into the sky and swarms before the sun as it beats down through a cloud. In the cockpit.
General Cypher Rage, initiating remote probe recon.
Dozens of probes rocket from the ship, leaving white trails in the sky. They shoot out in all directions, disappearing throughout the forest.
Primary target.
A small triangular probe swoops down through towering trees.
Ursa.
In the forest, a probe floats over a massive fallen tree. Tentacle-like arms extend from each of its three tips. Dozens of video feeds appear on Cypher's screen. Meanwhile, Katai hikes across a grassy slope.
I want to reiterate that your Navi band is our sole means of communication.
The holographic Roger. Screen hovers over his forearm.
The temperatures on this planet fluctuate dangerously, Katai. And most of the planet freezes over completely at night. But there are hot spots, geothermal nodes between here and the tail that will keep you warm during the freeze over. You must reach one of these hot spots each evening before nightfall. Is that understood?
Copy.
Standard operating procedure till I give you further instructions. Stand by.
The general picks up a smooth handheld device. As he guides it above his thigh, a holographic X-ray shows a bad break in his femur. Behind him, a computer analyzes the injury, showing a break in an artery. A message flashes, code 5 trauma, arterial shunt required. Cypher looks away from the screen, his jaw set in a firm scowl. He holds up a small oval container with the words Class 3 painkiller on it. Inside, he finds a 2-inch syringe and loads a red cartridge in the bottom. As the general closes the container, a warning message appears. Extreme drowsiness, impaired vision. Reaching down, he grimaces.
Dad, you there?
Cypher keeps his vacant stare ahead.
Hey, Dad, you there?
In a flashback, Senshi faces us.
Dad? You there?
In the desert, Cypher video chats on his Navi band.
I'm here.
A boy I know had this.
She holds up a copy of Moby Dick.
Hmm.
It's a real book. From a museum. It's Moby Dick.
She smiles at the book.
He said I could even hold on to it.
Cypher's distracted gaze focuses.
Hold on to what?
The book, Dad.
The general nods and looks around.
Did they really kill these whales?
We sent you for their oil, and they almost disappeared just before the age of carbon fuels.
Where's your brother?
The young Kitai kneels at his sister's side.
Hey.
He waves to his father with a big grin.
Dad, are you there?
Holding the syringe between his fingers, Cypher stares down at the blinking warning message. He lifts his bleary eyes.
I'm here.
The general puts the painkiller syringe back in its case. In the forest, the teen stares up at the towering trees. Walking past a fallen tree as tall as him, Kitai gently runs the tips of his fingers along its rough bark. On the ship, Cypher glances back and watches a strip of probe video feeds. The general brings one of the videos to his main screen. It shows a hyena-like creature viciously lunging at the camera. The probe floats away. Cypher turns, tightening his gaze on the other videos.
Where are you?
Our view hovers toward a massive tree angling up at the hollow trunk. Kitai walks beside a ridge overgrown with lush vegetation. With the cutlass secured to his back, the teen moves along a path below an enormous slanted log. The cadet slows to a stop as he notices his life suit darkening from its normal ruddy brown to pitch black.
My suit's turned black. I like you, but I think it's something bad.
Your suit is made of smart fabric. It has motion sensors. I'm tracking a life form moving toward you from the west.
It's closing rapidly.
50 meters.
Kitai arms himself with the cutlass and extends the blades.
40.
30. 20.
10.
On Cypher's display, a red dot rapidly moves toward a stationary blue dot.
It is right there, Kitai.
Our view circles the frightened teen, revealing an ape-like creature staring down from the slanted log. He sees it.
Do not move.
Katai's mouth hangs open.
Recognize your power. This will be your creation.
Breathing heavily, he looks around, then reaches down for a rock.
Stand down,
cadet.
As the creature inches forward, Kitai hurls the rock at it.
Kitai! Control yourself, cadet!
A dozen more of the ape-like creatures join their wounded friend. They stare down at the cadet from the ridge. As his gaze shifts between the vicious creatures, Kitai breaks his cutlass into two blades.
Kitai! Stand down!
Get away!
He swings at the apes and spins the blades.
Get away!
Kitai!
20 red dots appear on Cypher's screen. The creatures throw rocks at Kitai.
To your rear! Out to your rear!
As the cadet runs down a hill, the apes leap after him.
There's a river, 250 meters straight ahead. Go!
Kitai slides into a narrow gorge and sprints between its moss-covered walls. The apes follow relentlessly. Taking a running leap, the team kicks off from a standing tree and climbs onto a toppled one. He races down the length of the sturdy trunk. An ape lunges and misses as Kitai jumps over a branch. Kitai leaps from the fallen trunk to another, then slides down into the overgrown brush. The team runs at full speed. The beasts gain on him, running at Kitai's sides. At the top of a steep slope, the cadet falls face first and rolls onto his feet, narrowly evading the herd of apes. Emerging from the trees, Kitai runs toward a calm body of water and dives in. The apes stop at the shore as the young cadet swims away. On the ship, Cypher watches his son's video feed drift in and out of the water. The team reaches dry land and sprints across the rocky coast toward the forest.
They are no longer in pursuit. Cadet, you are not being followed. I repeat, you are not being followed. Kitai, you are running from nothing.
The team sprints through the forest.
Kitai!
In a clearing, he stops and pulls the cutlass from his back. His gaze darts frantically.
Kitai, put my damn cutlass away. You are not being followed. Take a knee.
Trembling, Kitai grips the weapon.
Take a knee, cadet.
He retracts the blade and lowers to his knee. As he calms himself, his suit turns light gray.
You want to die?
Today that is fine, but you are not going to kill me.
Kitai attaches the cutlass to his back and weakly drops his hand to the ground. Cypher turns to a screen displaying his son's vitals. A message blinks. Toxin.
Kitai, I need you to do a physical assessment. You are showing rapid blood contamination. Are you cut?
I'm dizzy.
Kitai, self-eval.
The teen checks his palms, then turns them over and finds a leech firmly attached to the back of his left hand. He shakes it vigorously and manages to detach the creature. A dark infection grows through the veins in his hand. The weak teen falls forward. His face swells around the eyes.
Daddy, I can't stand.
Open your med kit.
You are going to have to administer the antitoxin in sequence. Inject yourself with the clear liquid first.
Do it now.
Kitai pulls off his backpack and puts it on the ground. He searches with his hands.
I can't see.
The poison is affecting your nervous system. Stay even.
Dad, please come help me. I can't see. I can't do this by myself, Dad. Please come get me.
Kitai, inject yourself directly into your heart with the first stage.
Do it now.
With his right hand holding the backpack down, he feels around and finds the vial and syringe. Kitai touches the left side of his chest, then pushes the syringe against it and injects himself. His face continues to swell.
Now the second. ASAP.
Kitai feels around for the second vial, then touches his chest.
To your left, Kitai.
Left.
I can't feel my hands. Dad, I can't feel my hands.
Press it into the ground.
Roll over on it and
press it into the ground, Kitai.
With his eyes swollen shut, Kitai holds the syringe to his chest and drops forward, using the ground to push it in. The team rolls onto his side, holding his chest in pain. Kitai weakly rocks on his side, dropping his hand to the ground.
Great work, cadet.
The general stares with soft, watery eyes. His gaze hardens.
But you're going to have to lie there for a moment.
As Cypher stares ahead, he swallows hard.
The parasite that stung you has a paralyzing agent in its venom. So you are going to have to lie there for a little bit while the antitoxin does its job.
The team lies motionless in the leafy clearing. Now long fern leaves curl together and bend down over their stems. Throughout the forest, the vegetation tucks itself in.
It's time to wake up. Son, the temperature is dropping 5 degrees every 10 minutes. You have got to wake up.
His face back to normal, Kitai lies motionless.
Can you blink your eyes?
Cypher stares at his screen desperately.
son. I need you to please blink your eyes.
On the video feed, Kitai's eyelid rises slightly, then slowly opens wider. The weak teen blinks, expanding his eyelid further each time. Cipher nods and lowers his gaze.
Who's dead?
Hey.
That sucked.
That is correct.
Kitai slowly lifts his head.
You've got 9.7 kilometers to the hotspot. How about you show me that 10K in 50 minutes, cadet?
He pushes himself up.
Sir, yes, sir.
Kitai sprints along a grassy ridge while his father watches.
Ten miles out. All good.
Kitai bounds through lively ferns. The ship's medical monitor reconstructs the surgery required for Cypher's broken leg. A tube attached between two incisions in the thigh connects the artery from either side of the rupture, bypassing the damaged portion. Cypher sets down a bloody scalpel. He connects a clear tube from a gash above his knee to the incision in his thigh. He pinches the tube and blood flows through the makeshift arterial shunt. Sitting back, the general clenches his eyes. Kitai swiftly proceeds.
Who was it, Master Ranger? Who was it? Watch him go. Watch him go.
Cipher clenches his face. His heavy lids blink over his dazed eyes.
Five mics out.
Happy 19th birthday, Senshi.
In a flashback, he watches on a small tablet as Senshi holds up her birthday cake.
Dad, you help me.
No, Senshi, you go ahead. You blow.
Come on, Dad, blow.
Now, you know there's no way I can actually do that from here.
No, I think you can.
Cipher sits in a ship's hull.
Faya, you're right there. Help the girl.
You can do it.
Smoke rises from the candles.
I know you can.
Cipher glances at the rangers seated on either side of him, then leans toward the screen. The candles go out, and young Kitai leans into view. In the present, Cypher's swollen, narrowed eyes slowly close. In the forest, Kitai leaps over a massive tree trunk.
Hotspot one arrival. H plus 54 minutes.
Mist rises from the ground. Cipher winces in pain.
Equipment check and consolidate. Take your next inhaler.
Reaching behind him, Kitai removes the backpack and cutlass from his suit. He slides open a slim compartment, finding two broken vials among the five remaining. The cadet shifts his anxious eyes.
Yeah, oxygen extraction is bottoming.
Cipher lifts a thumb to his eye, then gently brushes his other eye. He raises his brow and blinks rapidly.
Take your next breathing fluid.
Kitai grabs a vial and holds it to his mouth. Cipher calmly listens to his son inhale the fluid.
Second dose of breathing fluid complete.
Cipher nods softly.
Count off remaining.
Full vials remain, sir.
Cipher turns and sees Kitai's heart rate elevate on his vitals monitor.
Repeat.
Kitai removes the two broken vials and examines them in his hand. Their leaked yellow gel sits in the empty compartment slots beside the final two vials. Kitai stares at the ground, then looks up with a confident gaze.
Four vials remain, sir.
Looking away from his son's vital signs, Cipher lightly nods. At night, lightning surges in the dark, cloudy sky. Kitai sits beneath a gigantic fallen tree trunk, taking cover from the pouring rain.
Dad.
He speaks into his glowing wrist.
Dad.
Cipher jolts awake, then closes his tired eyes.
I'm here.
How'd you do it? How'd you first ghost?
Out for a run. Alone. Something we're never supposed to do. Ursa D. Camos, right in front of me. I go for my cutlass. Shoots his pincer right through my shoulder. Next thing I know, we're over the cliff, falling. 30 meters, straight down, into the river.
Cypher fixes his stony, firm steer straight ahead.
We settle onto the bottom. It's on top of me. But it's not moving. And I realize he's trying to drown me.
Katai listens with a nervous, frightened gaze.
I'm thinking I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die. I cannot believe this is how I'm gonna die. I can see my blood bubbling up, mixing with the sunlight, shining through the water. And I think, wow, that's really pretty. And everything slows down. I see his pincer through my shoulder. And I decide I don't want that in there anymore. So I pull it out. And he lets me go. And more than that, I can tell it can't find me. Doesn't even know where to look.
The young cadet shifts his watchful gaze.
And it dawned on me. Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity, Katai. Now do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real. But fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story. And that day mine changed.
Cypher breaks his stare. Scooting forward, Katai slowly lies back on a grassy patch. He clutches Cypher's cutlass against his chest and closes his eyes. Fade to black. In the morning.
14 kilometers to the falls. That's our midway checkpoint.
Reading you.
Katai runs along a path through the forest. Cypher's arterial bypass monitor flashes condition critical, bypass malfunction. Blood soaks the sack beneath his leg as he glares at the video feed. Katai finds an ape's severed arm and stops.
Katai, get to the falls, ASAP.
The cadet sprints away from a ridge. Our view drifts to the clearing below, where bloody mangled ape carcasses lie in a mound. Cypher eyes the pile of carnage on a probe's video feed. A red grid flashes over the dead apes as the probe analyzes for Ursa signature. The results show a possible match. Bounding through the forest, Katai runs along a mossy tree trunk.
I hear something. I think it's water. A lot of it.
On a different trunk, the cadet stops with wide eyes. A stream flows along both sides of the fallen tree. Katai cautiously steps along the slick wood. He lifts a bewildered gaze, shifting his eyes at the terrain ahead. The cadet slows to a stop with his mouth hanging open. Katai gazes at a magnificent sprawling valley hundreds of feet below. Smoke billows from a volcano in a distant mountain range. He stands at the trunk's end, extending several feet over the sheer vertical drop. A series of gushing waterfalls line the expansive cliff. Far below, a river winds through the lush vegetation.
Inventory up.
Katai turns and shifts his gaze on the ground, then steps back along the trunk. Removing his backpack, the cadet crouches over his supplies.
Roger. Food rations half available, flares full, med kit half available, breathing fluid.
He stares down.
Breathing fluid 4 vials available.
Cypher notices his son's heart rate spiking on the vitals monitor. He faces the video feed.
Why are you not showing me the case?
What?
Show it to me now.
The cadet purses his lips and eyes the case. On the video feed, Cypher watches his son slide the slim compartment open, revealing only 2 breathing vials. The general's face tenses as he lowers his chin. Kitai closes the compartment.
I thought that I could make it, sir.
Kitai shifts his anxious eyes. On a holographic map of the cliffs, a red line draws a trail along the ridge and down a cliff wall to the valley below. Readings project a journey of 22 hours requiring 3.5 vials. A message flashes, "Do not attempt." A white line draws a more direct sky jump route, showing 1/16th of an hour and just over 2 vials to complete the mission. A message flashes, "Only survivable route." With his brow tensed, Cypher shifts his rigid contemplative stare. The general lifts his chin. In the forest, Kitai lowers his shameful gaze, then replaces the backpack on his suit. Breaking his stony stare, Cypher faces the video feed.
Abort mission. Return to the ship.
That is an order.
Kitai recalls hiding in the dome.
Don't come out. No matter what. That's an order.
In the flashback, young Kitai watches his sister face off with the terrifying Ursa. The Ursa throws Senshi against a wall, then pierces her body with its pointed limb. In the present, the team walks to the trunk's edge.
No, Dad. I can do it. I don't need many. I can get across with just 2.
You need a minimum of 3 inhalers to make it to the tail. You have exhausted your resources.
I can get across. I can do it with just 2, Dad.
This mission has reached abort criteria.
I take full responsibility. You did your best.
You have nothing more to prove. Now return to the ship.
Kitai's heart rate climbs.
What was your mistake? Trusting me? Depending on me, thinking that I could do this?
Now I'm giving you an order. To turn around and return to this ship.
Kitai paces with a furious scowl.
You wouldn't give any other ranger that order.
You are not a ranger. And I'm giving you that order.
Clenching his anguished face, the young cadet moves back down the tree trunk. Cypher's anxious eyes shift between Kitai's vitals monitor and the video feed.
What was I supposed to do? What did you want me to do? She gave me an order. She said no matter what, don't come out of that box.
Cypher nods slowly.
Was I supposed to just come out and die?
His heart rate soars.
What do you think, cadet? What do you think you should have done? Because really, that is all that matters. What do you think you should have done?
Kitai's tearful eyes shift along the sky.
And where were you? She called out for you. She called your name. And you weren't there because you're never there. And you think I'm a coward?
Glaring into the forest, Kitai wipes a tear from his eye.
You're wrong. I'm not a coward. You're the coward. I'm not a coward.
Kitai runs toward the edge.
Kitai!
The cadet dives off the trunk and plummets straight down. Spreading flexible wing-like material from his suit, Kitai glides like a flying squirrel. Cypher anxiously jolts forward. He tracks Kitai on a holographic map as a red dot approaches.
Kitai, you've got incoming. Do you copy? You've got incoming.
A massive condor soars above Kitai, its wingspan dwarfing the team. Swooping in, the condor claws at him, sending Kitai spinning through the air. He expands his flight suit's wings and straightens out, continuing along the cliff with the giant predator closing in.
Kitai, die! Die!
Tightly pressing his arms to his body, the cadet plummets along the jagged cliff. The condor stays on his heels. Looking aside, Kitai notices a surging waterfall. He extends his arms and turns, barely avoiding the condor's grasp. Kitai flies through the waterfall and the predator turns away. The cadet takes a brief dive, then glides horizontally. As he frantically glances about, the condor hits him head-on.
Cadet!
Cypher trembles anxiously as the video feed flashes with static, cut to black. Now a condor hatchling the size of a small dog pecks at the unconscious cadet. Startling away, Katai knocks the bird back. It pecks at his ear and he quickly stands. A few unhatched eggs lie in the center of a massive nest, enclosed by a thick dome of entwined tree limbs. Several hatchlings move about. Katai grabs his backpack. A leopard-like creature stalks atop the thatched nest. With the cutlass in hand, Katai climbs into a round opening but abruptly stops. Several more leopards climb the tree beside him. As the predator digs into the nest roof, the condor swoops in. The cat swipes at the giant bird. Katai readies his cutlass as another feline claws its way in and grabs a hatchling.
No! Leave them alone!
They square off. Katai ducks beneath the pouncing leopard. As it lunges again, Katai lies back and heaves it out of the nest. The predator falls dozens of feet. As the condor fights one off, another leopard leaps into the nest.
Get away!
Baring its fangs, the creature stalks toward Katai. As it lunges, the condor swoops in and grabs the beast. Pumping its giant wings, the bird lets go and the jungle creature plummets toward the ground. Another snarling beast faces Katai. Stepping back, he notices a loose section of nest beneath his feet. As the cat pounces, the brave cadet dives sideways and strikes the beast back, knocking it through the nest floor. Landing outside the nest, the condor faces Katai. Hopping to his feet, the wide-eyed cadet holds up his cutlass. The condor takes flight. Katai scans the nest, then retracts the cutlass blades. Stepping forward, he eyes the massacred hatchlings and eggs. Now Katai climbs down a thick vine and steps onto the ground. Nearby, the condor stands over some dead hatchlings. The somber bird gently grabs a chick's wing with its beak, then nudges the lifeless body. Unnoticed by the condor, Katai backs away as it extends its neck. Moving through the forest, Katai raises his wrist to his mouth.
Dad, I'm sorry, it's Katai.
Katai notices the broken communication device on his forearm. Sprinting through the forest, Katai comes to a wide, rocky riverbed and stops. In the cockpit, Cypher faces the probe's video monitor.
Where's my son?
As he searches each probe's feed, one flashes red. Its camera shows two dead rangers impaled in a tree. Cypher eyes it closely. In the probe scanning view, it detects the Ursa's signature as it drifts closer to the hanging bodies. The general shifts his firm stare from the monitor. In the riverbed, water spews from a crack in a crumbling dam, feeding the small river. Katai watches as the condor glides overhead and disappears behind a ridge. The young cadet follows the river's flow. At dusk, Katai hurries through a dense section of forest. He enters a rocky clearing where a waterfall pours into a shallow pool. Hopping a branch, the cadet steps to the water's edge and glances around. Across the pool, a large hog-like creature scurries into a cave with three striped piglets following. As the ferns coil, Katai desperately digs at the hog's cave. His breath shows in the frigid air. Feet first, the cadet slides into the dark cave. He turns on a flashlight and bobs his shivering body. Katai shines the light over human-drawn animals on the cave walls. A snake lowers beside his head and he darts away. Katai keeps his light on the predator. Looking away, the snake fans out its body and leaps across the cave. It lunges at a rodent on the floor and coils around it. Katai backs away and emerges through a crevice. An orange glow illuminates a wide-open section of cave. Below his flat ledge, Katai gazes at a steaming river of lava. In the cockpit, Cypher faces the probe's video monitor. He closes his eyes and rolls his head away. Lifting a hand, the weakening general opens the mission log.
General Safa Rage. This is a message for my wife. Faia. I have lost contact with our son.
Cypher's heavy eyelids blink slowly as he stares ahead.
End message.
In the cave, Kitai draws a map on the wall.
You have 6 files. At your weight, it should be 20 to 24 hours each. That's more than enough.
He draws the map in sections.
I estimate 4 days to reach the tail. Let's break it into sections. You have 6 hours to reach the first geothermal site. First leg, 20K to the mouth of the North Forest. I'm right here. Keep moving. Take your next inhaler.
H plus 54
minutes. There is an escarpment. Looks like it could be a waterfall. We will call that our midway point.
I can get across.
14 kilometers to the fall. This is us here.
He draws the hog hole near the ship's tail.
It's the tail. You are going to retrieve that beacon, or we are going to die.
Kitai eyes the map closely. Human drawings of horses mark the wall above. In the morning, Kitai cringes as he crawls out of the cave's entrance. With a half in each hand, he uses the curved cutlass blades to pull his body through. His tense gaze drifts down the rocky bank. The large hog and her piglets walk along the water's edge. High above, the massive condor circles the area, clipping a tree with its expansive wing. Kitai runs into an open clearing and twirls his cutlass. Backing against a tree, he looks skyward.
Leave me alone!
Now, the young cadet runs through dense jungle foliage. The thick forest canopy surrounds him on all sides. Treading over uneven rocky terrain, Kitai steps into a shallow ditch, then climbs over a fallen tree. Later, he weaves through moss and vine-covered trunks. Scattered sunlight shines through the abundant growth. The lone traveler stops by the edge of a gnarled root-filled riverbank. Turning around, he scans the forest. Opening his backpack compartment, he sees the one remaining vial of breathing fluid. Kitai grabs it and, through labored breaths, ingests the contents. He sets the hard-cased pack on the ground, leaving the empty compartment open. Blinking hard, the boy takes deep breaths. Later, he gathers low-hanging vines, then arranges a group of long branches side by side. Tying the branches with the flexible vines, the cadet makes a tight knot around the thick lengths of wood. Now he walks his makeshift raft into the middle of the river. As the calm, steady current pulls the craft along, he hops up onto it and gingerly walks toward the front end. Kitai picks up a long, thin branch twice his height and uses it to steer the simple boat. As he drifts along, he ducks under a low overhang of leaves extending from a riverside tree. He slowly pushes himself along the middle of the gray-green waters. The narrow river winds its way through an endless expanse of greenery. Leafy treetops flank the placid waterway. Now Kitai sleeps on his homemade raft. A young woman's long black hair falls into view as she leans over and whispers into the sleeping boy's ear. She leans back. Kitai lies peacefully on his side with his eyes closed.
Wake up.
His eyes flutter open.
It's time for you to wake up.
Looking up, he sees his older sister kneeling in front of him. Since she offers him a warm smile, he stares at her with an arm tucked under his head.
Hey.
Hey.
I was just about to come out that day.
No, you weren't. But you did the right thing.
Dad says I should have tried.
He's just mad at himself. That's all.
As the raft lazes along the river, Kitai shifts his gaze away from his sister. Squinting slightly, he looks back at her.
Why couldn't you ghost?
Since she glances down. Looking at her brother, she caresses his cheek with the back of her fingers.
You're close right now.
I am.
Are you scared?
No. I'm tired.
That's good. You filled your heart with something else. Now you gotta get up.
I memorized some of Moby Dick.
Kitai, get up.
All that most maddens and torments.
Kitai, wake
all
up.
All that stirs up the leaves of things.
Wake up, it's time
all
for you to wake
with malice
up.
In it.
Her face appears bloodied and mangled.
Wake up!
Kitai wakes violently. Sitting up on the grounded raft, he sees an encroaching frost spread across the water. The young cadet's rapid exhalations fog the air. He scrambles off the raft. Later, he staggers across the grassy ground with slow, heavy footfalls. His lips pursed resolutely, the boy plods through the forest as the trees and growth behind him turn white. Kitai clutches his shoulders. Later, he holds his arms stiffly at his sides. His lifesuit slowly changes from its ruddy brown to white. Kitai stumbles. Later, he stands at the base of a massive tree trunk. Shivering violently, he leans over and pulls his arms toward his body. Now, Kitai trudges up a slope. The creeping frost slowly covers the foliage around him. Reaching the top, he straightens his back. The boy scans his now icy environs. Bits of frost appear in his short, curly black hair. Looking down, Kitai falls to his knees. He collapses onto his side. Frozen crystals encrust the grass and solidify on the cadet's eyebrows, nose, and chin. As he shivers, he catches a blurry glimpse of flickering shadows moving across the treetops. Kitai struggles to keep his eyes open. As they finally shut, his head sags onto the frigid ground. The unconscious boy slides out of view. Now our view gets dragged back across the ground, pausing sporadically. Inside a shallow depression in the ground, Kitai's face disappears in darkness. Later, the sun shines through a layer of leaves as Kitai stirs in the hole. He looks around the interior of the chamber. Lying on his back, he turns to his right, then reaches out. He pulls aside a clump of leaves. Sunlight pours into the dark space. Kitai tears more of the shrubbery away. He crawls toward the newly made opening and shimmies out of the hole on his stomach. The cadet stands before a peaceful, sunny forest landscape. Turning around, he catches sight of a massive black wing on the ground. Kitai looks over the still body of the giant condor. He goes to the large bird and puts a hand on its wing.
Heh. Thanks.
He looks at the unresponsive creature. Leaning over, Kitai gives the condor a gentle shove. The lifeless animal lies over the depression. Its feathered body covers the small hole. Kitai stands upright, staring down at the condor. The boy takes a step back. Kitai slowly puts more distance between himself and his winged protector. Now the lone traveler walks through a field of tall grass. His shoulders sagging, Kitai takes labored breaths and clutches his chest. He comes upon a piece of white debris partially obscured in the weeds. The fragment bears a serial number. Kitai leans closer, then pulls back a few blades of grass to reveal the word, Hesper. He looks down at the small piece of the transport ship. His erratic gaze scans the surrounding landscape. Now Kitai climbs onto a Y-shaped branch of a tree. Stepping onto the cleft in the forking plant, he ascends further through the canopy. Through a break in the trees ahead of him, the ranger cadet spies the tail's crash site. Under a darkening sky filled with charcoal clouds, Kitai runs up a grassy hill. On the summit, he arrives near the broken tail end of the ship. Long strips of crumpled white material cover the hillside. Pieces of the vessel's exposed framework stick out of the ground. The broken shell of the ship lies at the top of the gently sloping peak, surrounded by a patch of scorched earth. Kitai heads for the jagged and twisted opening at the rear of the spaceship remnants. Stumbling over the debris inside the craft, he staggers over to a small intact section of the cabin wall. Tattered bits of plastic hang down and flutter in the wind. Kitai brushes dust off a rectangular panel. He peels back the rubbery flap to reveal a compartment full of breathing liquid vials. As he steps away, he ingests one of the vials. Doubled over, his labored breathing slowly eases. Kitai yanks on a length of fabric tangled around his arm, then takes a seat in the cabin. He ingests a second vial of breathing fluid. Later, he pulls aside various bits of netting atop a thin white box. Opening its rubbery top flap, he retrieves a cutlass. Kitai presses on the rod with both thumbs. Various blade configurations shoot out both ends of the weapon handle. He watches a thin, curved blade transform into a long, thin spear point. He looks up from the cutlass. The large black casing that contained the Ursa sits in two cracked halves amid the bushes. Strands of a viscous yellow slime coat the white interior of the alien structure. Kitai cautiously circles the casing with his cutlass at the ready. Looking at the empty chamber, he relaxes his shoulders slightly. Now, the cadet walks briskly across the field with his cutlass in both hands. In the cockpit, Cypher's medical monitor displays a bypass failed message. The bleary-eyed soldier shakes his head. In a flashback, his toddler son brings him his cutlass. In the cockpit, the general shakes his head and opens his eyes.
No.
He lifts his chin. In the flashback, the toddler Kitai walks to Faya, who kneels down to give him a kiss. Cypher's eyes flutter closed. He slowly shakes his head back and forth. Meanwhile, Kitai sees the hand of a fallen ranger underneath a broken segment of the ship. He reaches under the debris, then clips a new nabi band onto his forearm. Holstering his cutlass onto his backpack, he hops over to another cluster of wall panels. Inspecting them, he reaches for a lower compartment and removes the small teardrop-shaped emergency beacon. He pulls open the device. In the cockpit, the holographic displays flicker to life.
Dad.
Slumping in his chair, Cypher lifts his head toward the screens.
Dad, I made it to...
Kitai.
Dad, I made it to the tail. Do you copy?
The injured general reaches for the control panel.
Kitai, I'm here. Are you okay?
Dad, do you read me?
I copy.
Dad... I made it to the tail. Do you copy?
Kitai, we have electrical interference. You are in a black zone. I repeat, you are in a black...
Kitai stares into the camera on his backpack.
Dad, the Ursa is not contained. Please copy.
His brow raised, the cadet looks off. He shifts his teary gaze downward, then clutches his head. His nostrils flare as he rubs his fingers in his scalp.
Dad...
I'm here. I swear to you, I'm here.
Now Kitai pulls open the beacon. He raises the device high above his head. An orange indicator light turns red. The boy looks at a message, signal interference. He moves forward several feet, then tries again. Holding it aloft, he watches the orange light turn red. Kitai sees the same message. After a few tense paces, he drops it on the ground. Cypher observes a holographic icon showing the location of the ship's tail. He looks over at Kitai's video feed. His son smashes bits of the shattered ship with his cutlass. The general shakes his head. Pacing away from the wreckage, Kitai puts both hands on the back of his head. A smoldering volcanic mountain looms in the distance.
Take a knee.
Kitai gets down on one knee. The boy picks up the emergency beacon. As he examines it, the general watches him intently from the cockpit.
It is the ionic layer. In the atmosphere above your current position, it is causing electrical interference. That is why the beacon is not firing.
Kitai gazes down thoughtfully, then looks skyward. Squinting, he looks at the clouds overhead.
To your north, the peak. You must fire the beacon from the peak of that mountain.
Scrutinizing the air above, Kitai glances down to the beacon in his hand. He shifts his gaze toward the dark clouds above the mountain.
See it, Kitai. Please. See it.
The boy turns his head farther and faces the tall black peak in the distance. He slowly gets to his feet. Kitai starts to walk toward the volcano. His father watches through the live feed.
Good boy. Good boy. Good boy.
Now Kitai makes his way through thick clusters of tall grasses and reeds. He hacks a trail for himself with the cutlass. Sweeping aside a broad leaf, he finds a dead crew member hanging from a tree. Kitai raises his weapon and looks around frantically.
It is a pheromone trigger. He said it to scare you, so he can track you. Keep moving.
Kitai lowers the weapon and speeds off through the forest. On the ship, Cypher stares at the map. An alert reads, unknown life form. Kitai travels a path between tall grass and bamboo-like plants. Reaching a clearing, he stops and glances back. The alert on Cypher's map reads, Ursa.
It has found you.
He watches the signal approach his son's location. The teen sprints to the base of the volcanic mountain. Smoke billows out from the top. Kitai runs at full speed up the side, passing small craters of lava. Further up, the desperate cadet leaps over a patch of molten rock. Clouds and smoke cover the blue-tinted sky, and lava oozes down the mountain's black surface. On the ship, Cypher's map displays the volcano's internal chambers. Locator alerts show the Ursa closing in on Kitai. Reaching a flat section on the mountain, the cadet moves toward a steep, ashy wall. His suit turns black. With a panicked expression, he pulls out the emergency beacon and holds it high. A message reads, signal interference. In the cockpit, Cypher watches the Ursa's signal move closer.
Run. Just run, Kitai. Just run.
The teen leaps over large rocks to a cave entrance. Standing at the edge of darkness, Kitai releases the blades from his cutlass and ventures inside. As he moves deeper, he swings his blade in the air. Weakly holding his hand to his head, Cypher watches the Ursa tracking icon overlap Kitai's. The cadet hides behind a spiky rock formation, peering around with the blade held up at his side. Kitai moves through the cave, surrounded by dark crystal-like formations. He cautiously steps forward, his eyes searching his surroundings. Cypher watches his son's heartbeat race on the vitals monitor. With his lips parted, Kitai continues forward, crossing under a long rock. Powdered debris falls behind him, drawing his gaze to the ground. His eyes drift up past the long rock to the top of the cave walls. The Ursa leaps down at him. Kitai drops to the ground as falling rubble pins the creature to the overhead rock. The cadet dodges the Ursa's swings, then scrambles to his feet. The beast knocks him across the cave into a rock. Using its numerous clawed limbs, it rises on its haunches. Kitai springs up, then hurries off. He leaps across a gap and hides in a cranny behind jagged crystallized rocks. The eyeless beast plows a path through the rock. It fires a liquid from its mouth. A small portion hits the teen's shoulder, burning through his light suit. Kitai rolls back and falls into a dark hole. On the ship, Cypher holds his hand to his head with his eyes closed tightly. Now Kitai floats in water. A small light on his suit illuminates. On the ship, a monitor reads, bypass malfunction, bypass fail, transport immediately. With his eyes closed, the general's head slowly drifts down toward the control panel. His body follows, falling onto the chair's side. Underwater, Kitai shifts his frightened gaze. He spots light shining down into the water and swims toward it. Lying against the control panel, Cypher weakly rolls his head. His eyes struggle to stay open. Kitai surfaces in a pit and takes a deep breath. He stares up at an opening atop the narrow cave walls. He climbs onto a boulder, then plants his feet on opposing rock walls and works his way up. Roughly 20 feet up from the water, Kitai puts his back against one side of the crevice and his feet on the other. The Ursa lunges up from the water and grabs the teen's foot. As it tugs violently, Kitai extends his cutlass's blades, piercing the cave walls and creating a support beam from which to hang. The cadet kicks the Ursa off, but the creature swings one of its limbs, piercing his leg. Kitai breaks free and the beast drops back into the water. The teen pulls himself up. Mounting the cutlass beam, he gives a fearful look around. The monstrous creature leaps up again, failing to reach Katai through the narrow cave walls. As it drops back down, Katai climbs onto the wall and removes his cutlass, securing it on his back. The team looks down at the beast, then climbs to the surface. Now Ash floats down like snowflakes as the team pulls himself onto a flat, rocky plateau. He pushes himself up to his feet and moves to the edge of a cliff. Fiersa climbs up the cave walls, breaking through the narrow rock passage. The fretful team pulls the emergency beacon from his backpack. As Katai holds the beacon in the air, a message reads, "Scanning." He moves around searching for a stronger signal. Another message reads, "Signal located," and the device emits a soft blue light. Katai falls face first, dropping the beacon, which continues blinking in a crevice by the edge. The beast whips the team through the air and against the mountainside, then tosses him on the ground. The cadet lies in ashes, struggling to breathe, while the Ursa tries to keep from slipping back into the hole. On the ship, Cypher lies twitching. On the mountain, Ash falls on the cadet as he holds his hand to his stomach. He remembers himself as a boy with his sister holding him tightly.
Climb in here, okay? It won't be able to smell you.
Staring up at the sky, the teen recalls watching his sister from within the dome.
Dad!
And Ursa holds Senshi in the air, then tosses her against the wall. Young Katai weeps, balled up inside the glass dome. Our view pulls away from the frightened boy. On the volcano's plateau, Katai's hand lies in a small puddle of blood.
Root yourself in this present moment, now.
He stares up at the falling ash.
Sight, sound, smell. What do you feel?
Katai rubs blood between his thumb and fingers. His hand slowly opens. The teen's skyward gaze calms. On the raft, Senshi whispers into his ear as he sleeps.
You're still in that box. It's time to come out.
On the mountain, the cadet stares up with a serene expression. He watches ashes fall toward him. The Ursa's head appears over Katai. The creature raises its three-fingered claw, then sets it down and walks over the fearless teen. The cadet lies still as the beast's massive foot lands just beside his head. Katai swallows hard. On the ship, Cypher lies against the control panel, struggling to keep his eyes open. On the plateau, the Ursa walks past Katai. The teen sits up and slowly rises to his feet. Behind Katai, the Ursa searches. The fear-sensitive beast lunges at an empty space, then turns around. The cadet reaches down and picks up his cutlass. On the ship, the general lies helplessly. Katai extends the blades from his cutlass and slices off one of the creature's limbs. As the Ursa limps away, the teen breaks his cutlass in two and flings one of the halves into the beast. The Ursa spits two batches of acid at Katai. He dodges them both, then leaps over a rock as the beast's massive foot shatters it. Katai spots the beacon under the Ursa and charges forward. As he slides beneath the alien's legs, one of its feet knocks the device away. Cypher keeps his eyes barely open. Katai glares at the Ursa, then takes a running leap with a blade in each hand. Katai sinks the long blades into the Ursa's neck. Holding on, he rides the gigantic beast as it flails about. Katai retracts the blades, but quickly extends them back through the Ursa's neck. The cadet glares ahead with his brow tensed as the Ursa crawls toward the cliff's edge. Lifting his arms, Katai extends multi-pronged blades from each end and thrusts them down. The alien stumbles forward. With a rigid stare, Katai lies on its back as the Ursa collapses. Its massive head hangs over the cliff's edge. The brave cadet rapidly shifts his gaze. In the cockpit, Cypher's glazed eyes hang open. Katai pulls the cutlass blades from the Ursa's neck and stands. The light flurry of ash continues falling beneath the dark gray sky. The young cadet shifts his gaze along the enemy's body. His life suit gradually changes back to a dark brown. Katai turns and rushes toward the beacon. As the cadet slides it open, the center glows blue. He points it toward the sky, and the beacon launches a brilliant beam high above Earth, spreading a blue pulse into the universe. Now, in a dark space, a radiant light moves along thick, translucent material from the outside. The cutout section falls forward, revealing three men in hazmat-like suits. They step into the crashed ship's cockpit and find General Cypher slumped against the controls. Now, using a flat surface, the suited men carry Cypher's body out of the dark cockpit. On another ship, Kitai strides down a white hallway in his life suit. Watching footage of Kitai slaying the Ursa, a ranger's wide eyes follow the cadet as he passes. Kitai stops with a worried gaze. In slow motion, rangers hustle about as a group of them lean over Cypher on a medical bed. Kitai watches closely. Cypher's hand rises, pushing aside a ranger blocking his view. As the ranger steps back, Cypher spots his son. Kitai remains still, keeping his anxious gaze on his father.
Stand me up.
General.
I said stand me up.
The ranger drapes Cypher's arm around his shoulders and slowly stands him up as a few others help. With his face firmly clenched, the general keeps his eyes on Kitai. The brave cadet watches his father.
Watch his back.
As they stabilize him on his feet, Cypher removes his arm from the ranger's shoulder. Facing Kitai, the general slowly lifts his flat, trembling hand into a salute. Kitai shifts his anxious gaze, then strides forward and wraps his arms around his father. With his eyes closed, Cypher gently kisses Kitai's head. They share a long embrace.
Dad.
Yeah.
I want to work with Mom.
Me too.
The general nods softly. Opening his eyes, Cypher kisses his son's head as the rangers lay him back on the bed. Kitai pulls his arms away and helps with Cypher's legs. As the rangers resume their medical work, a smirk spreads on the general's face. Now the spaceship slowly rises beside a rocky hill with its brilliant blue thrusters glowing beneath the tail. It makes a gradual turn and soars over the vast hilly forest of towering pines. In the medical bay, Kitai sits beside the bed with his hands on Cypher's chest. He glances back as a middle-aged ranger operates on the unconscious general's leg. Other rangers work throughout the room. Kitai looks at his father's face, then lifts a pensive gaze. With a slight grin, the brave cadet softly nods to himself. A breaching whale-like creature smashes onto the ocean's calm surface as the ship soars overhead. A large cluster of whales swim together. Their lumpy backs emerge from the dark water in smooth motions. The spaceship soars into the distant sky. Fade to black. Titles appear, directed by M. Night Shyamalan. Screenplay by Gary Whitta and M. Night Shyamalan. Story by Will Smith. Produced by Khalid Pinkett, Jada Pinkett Smith, and Will Smith, James Lasseter, M. Night Shyamalan. Executive producer E. Bennett Walsh. Director of photography Peter Suchitsky, ASC. Production designer Tom Sanders. Editor Stephen Rosenblum, ACE. Music by James Newton Howard. Costume designer Amy Westcott. Visual effects supervisor Jonathan Rothbart. Co-producers Ashwin Rajan, John Rusk. Casting by Douglas Abel, Jaden Smith, Will Smith, Zoe Isabella Kravitz, Sophie Okonedo, Glenn Morshauer, Christopher Hivshu. A film by M. Night Shyamalan. Cast: Jaden Smith as Katai Rage, Will Smith as Cypher Rage, Sophie Okonedo as Fire Rage, Zoe Isabella Kravitz as Senshi Rage, Glenn Morshauer as Commander Velon, Christopher Hivju as Security Chief, Sasha Dawan as Hesper Pilot, Chris Gear as Hesper Navigator, Diego Klattenhoff as Veteran Ranger, David Denman as Private McQuarrie, Lincoln Lewis as Running Cadet, Jaden Martin as 9-year-old Katai, Sincere L. Bob as 3-year-old Katai, Monica Jolly as Female Ranger, Second Unit Director Stunt Coordinator Chad Stahelski, Stunt Coordinator R.A. Rondell, Aerial Stunt Coordinator Timothy Rigby, Stunts Hank Amos, Daniel Arroyo, Jake Brake, Jared Burke, Bryson Counts, Arturo Joe Dickey, Nima Gerbachi, Keontae Elam, Jonathan Eusebio, Bago Gerhardt, David P. Griffith, Jeff Haberstad, Trevor Haberstad, Randy Haney, Brian Hewitt, Natasha Hopkins, Steve Izzy, Jake Lombard, Sam Luke, Victor Thai Lopez, Sam Lee, Michael McGuire, David Morizot, Jeffrey Nebelkoff, Gabriel E. Nunez, Joby Aguin, Victor Paglia, Claro Pope, Tracy Ruggiero, Todd Schubotham, Philip J. Silvera, John Valera, Aerial Helicopter Pilot Cliff Fleming, Unit Production Manager E. Bennett Walsh, First Assistant Director John Rusk, Second Assistant Director John R. Saunders, Second Assistant Director John Nasrawi, Visual Effects Producer Jenny Full, Associate Producer Kwame L. Parker, Art Directors Naaman Marshall, Robert Joseph, Dean Wolcott, Set Decorator Rosemary Brandenburg, Property Master Andrew Petroda, Script Supervisor Anna Rain, A Camera Operator Mitch Dubin, B Camera Operator John S. Moyer, First Assistant A Camera John Karras, First Assistant B Camera Stephen Cueva, Second Assistant A Camera David O'Brien, Second Assistant B Camera Jozo Zavko, Digital Imaging Technician Toby Gallo, Costume Supervisor Lisa Lovas, Key Costumers Laura Walford, Laura Baker, Deborah Zimmerman, Costumer Angie Ziegler, Specialty Costume Leticia Sandoval, Department Head Makeup Judy Murdoch, Key Makeup Artist Tim Buasherern, Makeup Artist Beverly Joe Pryor, Department Head Hairstylist Pierce Austin, Key Hair Artist Renee J. Vaca, Hairstylist Aroxy Lindsay, Chief Lighting Technician Mo Flam, Assistant Chief Lighting Technician Ryan Rodriguez, Rigging Chief Lighting Technician Charles Grubbs, Key Grip Charles Maraquin, Best Boy Grip Nick Haynes Styles, Dolly Grips James Hirdegin, Andrew Sweeney, Rigging Key Grip Michael McFadden, Sound Mixer Todd Maitland, Boom Operator Michael Scott, Sound Utility Jerry Ewan, Video Assist Johnny Medeiros, Jeff A. Snyder, Special Effects Supervisor Tommy Frazier, Special Effects Foreman David Amborn, Joe DiGaetano, Production Coordinator Betsy Alton, Assistant Production Coordinators Chris McHenry, Corey Myler, Production Secretary Adam Shoon, Assistant Location Manager Bill Arrowwood, Production Accountant Tish Johnson, First Assistant Accountant Rebecca Glue, Payroll Accountant Greg Highsmith, Construction Coordinator Paul Williams, Construction Foreman Robert Vanstone, Benjamin R. White, Plaster Foreman Jacob House, Paint Supervisor Larry Clark, Lead Sculptor Val Drake, Key Greens Foreman Daniel L. Andreshko, Standby Painter Bill Cajone Hoyt, Assistant Art Director Sarah L. Boardman, Set Designers Robert Woodruff, David Meyer, Theodore Sharps, Art Department Coordinator Jenny Lee, Illustrator Hugh Sicote, Graphic Designer Ben Wolcott, On-Set Dresser Morgan Miller, Lead Man Jason Bedig, Drapery Foreman Deb Jones, Assistant Property Master Rick Chavez, Hannah Hinkle. Copyright 2013 Columbia Pictures Industries, Inc., all rights reserved. Columbia Pictures Industries, Inc. is the author of this film, motion picture, for the purpose of copyright and other laws. This is a work of fiction. The characters, incidents, and locations portrayed and the names herein are fictitious, and any similarity to or identification with the location, name, character, or history of any person, product, or entity is entirely coincidental and unintentional. Sony Pictures Entertainment, SPE, and its wholly owned film divisions did not receive any payment or other consideration for the depiction of tobacco products in this film. This motion picture photoplay is protected pursuant to the provisions of the laws of the United States of America and other countries. Any unauthorized duplication and or distribution of this photoplay may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. This film has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from Columbia Pictures, read by Miles Neff. For more information about Motion Picture Access, visit our website at access.wgbh.org. In a logo, a brilliant flickering light surrounds a leaping man, Blinding Edge Pictures. Sony, make believe. Columbia Pictures, a Columbia Pictures release, a Sony Pictures Entertainment Company.